This week, we revive age-old building skills in Tasmania, check the crab pots on Queen's Lake, and head down to the wharf in Cairns in North Queensland, where Nadine Adams is busy unloading tiger prawns. This former Londoner has been working the prawn boats for years, rising up the ranks from cook to deckie, and now she's first mate.
It does break a lot of people. I've seen grown men cry. You know, a lot of people come on and they try their hardest, but they're just not cut out for it. And then, we have to go and drop them off or whatever. There's only the few that actually come back season after season and enjoy the work.
And she's definitely one of them. She's even going for her skipper's licence. Life on a prawn trawler coming up. But let's start our journey over in the west, to the Nullarbor Plain, in fact, where shearing is underway on Rawlinna Station.
Hi, Ross. Hi, Joey.
Hi, Tara. Come on in.
Hey, Tara.
Hi, guys.
Good to see you again.
You too.
Would you like coffee?
Yes, please.
Have you got a trip out?
Yeah.
Well, I certainly need a strong cup of coffee after the trip I've been on to get here. Hello, I'm Tara DeLandgraft, and today I've made my way out to Rawlinna Station, a vast sheep property in Western Australia's Nullarbor region. It's several hundred kilometres east of Kalgoorlie and about halfway to the South Australian border. It's a super busy time on Rawlinna at the moment. They're smack bang in the middle of shearing, a job that will take about 2 months to complete. Now that might sound like a long time, but there's 60,000 sheep to muster and get through the shed. Coordinating the job is station manager Ross Wood.
Rawlinna's 365 kilometres east of Kalgoorlie. It's a large fenced sheep station that runs from the trans line and right down to the air highway. It's 12,000 square kilometres, which equates to around about 4 million acres, and we'll be shearing around about 60,000 sheep this year.
And you're halfway through?
We are. We finally got past the halfway mark last weekend, so we're now under pressure to sort of catch up, and, you know, all the things, of course, are under pressure now because, you know, things are starting to wear out. Gates are breaking in the yards. Vehicles are starting to break, people are getting tired, but we've got to keep pushing on and get to the end of it.
What are we setting out to do today?
We're mustering our next batch of age group of ewes. They're the ewe hoggets, and we're starting on processing those, you know, working them down towards the shed. The shearers have got us on the ropes a little bit, so we're chopping through the sheep around about 2,000 to 2,300 a day. We've got 14 stands working at the moment, 15 stands next week. That'll keep me under pressure pretty well, keeping the sheep coming in.
Well, it sounds like we've got a busy day ahead.
You're right, we've got to get cracking.
See you, Joe.
No, Miss Kitango Hotel, no, Miss Kitango Bravo.
It takes quite a team to shear 60,000 sheep, around 50 people, in fact. And the shearing shed, which is smack bang in the middle of the 1.6 million hectare property, has 16 stands. In fact, Rawlinna is touted to be the biggest working sheep station in all of Australia.
We have shorn in the past up to 78,000, but that takes a series of good years to be able to achieve that without knocking the country around. So we've just been blessed with an enormous rain now, and we're in the process of configuring ourselves now for a run of good seasons and being able to push those numbers up and take advantage of the great seasons, great bull prices and great sheep prices.
Well, this is quite a shed. It's two stories high. The bottom story is raised full of pens of sheep that have come in from the holding paddocks, and then they go up through a ramp in the middle of the shed to the top deck, where 16 pens dominate the middle of the shed, and eight shearing stands line each of the two long walls with two sets of tables, two lots of classes, two presses, and two lots of bins. Now, the clock has just ticked over for lunch, so I'm dying to chat to some of the shearers who stay here for more than 2 months to get through this mammoth job.
G'day, I'm Jared Place from Keith in South Australia. I've removed the wool from all the sheep as quick as possible.
What sort of numbers are you doing at the moment?
Around the 160 a day.
Happy with that?
Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, I'm happy with it.
Is this your first time at Rawlinna?
Yes, I did the crutching here and my first year in here, yes.
So why come back?
Just the experience. Well, at crutching time, you just have two people here, and now we've got 45 people here, haven't we? So, it's a bit different,
Is this the biggest shed you've shorn in?
Yes, yep, biggest number-wise. Yeah, a lot of sheep here. I've never really worked in a shed like this before. It's a bit different. It's like there's two teams working, but then at the end of the day, we're all one team.
Do you have little competitions, though?
Everyone has a competition.
So who's winning, your side or the other side?
I think the other side's winning at the moment.
You have to lift your game, Jared.
Oh, yeah, we'll have to. We'll have to, yes.
2 months is a long stint.
It is a long stint. Everyone gets a bit frustrated by the end of it, but everyone goes pretty good.
Will you come back?
I'll think about it.
Now, Natasha Richter, I've interrupted you while you're cleaning your comb. You're about to start again after lunch. You're the only female here in the shed.
Yep, but there's heaps of us out there, getting more and more all the time, yeah, which is good to see.
Is this your first time at Raw Linen?
Yep, yeah, definitely.
What do you think of it?
Yeah, no, they're pretty solid. Yeah, hard going, but yeah, that's part of the job, good with the bad.
5 weeks in, what numbers are you doing?
Yeah, no, I'm not doing too many. I've had a bit of a break. I've been off of a sore shoulder for a while, so I'm taking it steady coming back. I think I'm the oldest one here too, aren't I? That's a good game.
The bloke responsible for getting this gang together is shearing contractor George Wilson. He's scoured the countryside to find his workers. How do you assemble a team like this? Because from what I understand, they certainly don't work together each day.
No, they don't, but I've been contracting for a lot of years now, so the network's quite big. So over the years, I sort of don't have too much trouble filling the shed. A lot of people want to come here because it's the biggest one now in the world. But the only difficulty with that is that I don't like employing people I really don't know. So it's hard for anybody to get a job here, really, because you've got to get to know me first.
I'll let you go and have some lunch because I hear behind everybody else. Is there going to be anything left?
Yes, there will be. Yeah, I won't miss out. Be plenty there.
Well, talking about lunch, let's meet the all-important team working to feed this team breakfast, lunch and dinner, and of course, smoko in between.
Hi, my name is Chris Brokey and I'm from Kayankata in South Australia.
I'm Deborah Keller and I'm from Kayankata in South Australia.
And ladies, I've wandered into your kitchen. You've just had a mammoth effort for lunch. How many did you feed today?
We'll feed 30 today, yeah. Usually about 35 sometimes.
That's a big crowd.
Just a day's work. It is, really. It is. It's just a common day's work.
You're here for 2 months, sometimes a bit longer. This is your second year out here in the kitchen. I mean, where do you come up with all your ideas?
I'm a mum. just common cooking is mainly it, and just your variation with a bit of taste here and there, and like French onion soup on top of chops or honey barbecue chicken, things like that. It's quite easy, really. Been cooking for too many years.
And you're pretty busy because not only do you do breakfast, lunch and dinner for these guys, but you're doing smoko as well. And I see you making something here in front of us. What's this?
This is quiches because I've been volunteered to go and get the supplies tomorrow, so it means Deb and I have to do a double take today.
Well, I better not hold you up because there might be 35 or 45 disappointed people if I do.
It won't worry me because I won't be here.
Raw Linen is using both helicopters and fixed-wing aircraft to muster the sheep this year. One of those with a bird's-eye view of all the action is pilot Benny Kerr. He works full-time on the property, but during shearing, he spends almost more time in the air than he does on the ground.
My job in the air is basically to spot the sheep in the paddocks, because we got very large paddocks in the hundreds of square kilometres in the area. And I fly along and spot the sheep from the air, and we've got a team of motorbike crew on the ground. And I've got a UHF radio, so which I contact the guys on the ground, and they pick up the sheep and move along.
So what sort of aircraft are you flying?
I fly a Cessna 182. Cool little plane, very versatile, very stable, and good little mustering plane.
So are you here all year round?
Yep, all year. And it's a very full-on. We live and work out here on the station.
So all year in the plane or just for shearing?
No, shearing's our busiest time of the year. We've got three main periods, shearing during the late summer, early autumn, and then lamb marking across winter, and crutching across spring. There are three busiest periods where I'm up in the air. For the rest of the year, I'm down on the ground with the rest of the guys, and work the windmills, fixing pipelines, and general maintenance.
All this hard work should pay big dividends for Rawlinda this year. After some very tough years, woolen sheep meat prices are surging once again, and that's good news for those involved in the industry. Manager Ross Woods reckons the clip alone will be worth around $3 million. How much are you expecting to get back from this year's wool clip?
Good question. I think it really depends on the number of bales that we produce. We should be producing 1,500 bales or more. Do the maths, it's about $2,000 a bale, so that helps. And if we can sell 15 to 20,000 sheep on top of that, everyone knows where the sheep prices are.
Well, I'm pretty knackered from just watching these shearers all day. The sun's setting, I'm just watching some flighty, freshly shorn sheep wander back to their paddocks, and everyone's having a well-earned coldie. And why not? They've done a pretty good job today on the nation's biggest pastoral sheep station, which is still riding high on the sheep's back, riding a little bit higher this year too.
What we're doing is you just pick up a stone that you want to fit tight against the next stone, and you've got a sort of level between each stone so you can break your joints so that you don't end up with running joints up through your wool. Yeah, and so you're trying to make you sort of look random, but it's not random, there's a process to it.
It's a bit like a giant jigsaw puzzle. Piles of rocks in all shapes and sizes and even colours that will come together over time to form a beautiful stone wall. It's not a fast job. Stonemason John Bolan needs to carefully consider the placement of each and every rock to make sure it's going to look just right.
Yeah, we just take the stones, and if they've got waves, if sometimes they've got bumps and waves on them, so we chip those off so that they don't stick out of the wall too far.
Hello, I'm Larissa Smith. John and his offsider are working on this building site near Hadspin in Tasmania's northeast.
Yeah, we're trying to get a sort of a uniform 10mm joint of mortar between each stone so it looks nice and neat.
You think you've developed an eye for exactly what stone goes where in the time you've been doing this?
You do, you get better at it. You still got to think all the time. It's one of those jobs it doesn't look like we're thinking much, but you've got to, at the end of the day, you're mentally tired more than physically tired, because you've got to think all day about which stone, how high it's going to be and what shape it's going to be.
And you're working with some different colours as well here with the rocks that have been quarried from the farm.
Yeah, some of them come out of the quarry and they're a bit lighter brown, and some of them were picked off roads and fence lines and things, so they're a bit darker. Some of them have got bits of lichen on them, but so you sort of got to mix the colours up so you don't have all light stones and all dark stones. We've got to try not to have too many chipped stones so we don't have a bit of blue, too much blue in one patch, so you've got to mix that up a bit too. Even though they're irregular stones, there is a process to how they go together. You've got a set of rules of how a stone has to sit and be laid so that it looks uniform right around the house and looks consistent. And because there's two of us working on it, I've got to have a set of a way that the stones are laid so that Tony's lays them the same as me, so it looks similar, which can be hard if you've got more than quite a few people working on a house, stonemasons. It can be hard to get that consistency right through the wall.
John works as a stonemason now, but he's not always been looking at rocks. He and his partner moved to Tasmania after a stint in New South Wales working in the forestry industry. How different is this job to what you were doing some 10 years ago back in New South Wales?
New South Wales, I was working for prospectus forestry companies, and yeah, that was just more managing people, or it was sort of more horticultural work. Managing people driving tractors and spray rigs and ripping tractors and irrigation crews and things. Yeah, so it's totally different, really. I like it's a lot easier. must be smoko time. He always barks at smoko time. When we finished up in forestry, my partner Danielle and I just wanted a break, and I really wanted to do work with my hands, a trade of some sort. So we went travelling around Australia to find where we'd move to. And we came back to Tassie because Tassie was the spot that we liked the most. It had the best climate and the nicest people. Yeah, and it was just the first job I got into was labouring for a stonemason. And that's how we came to be here.
John doesn't just work with his hands building stone walls. He and his partner have also realised their dream to buy a small property here in Tasmania. So he's now juggling work as a stonemason with everyday farm work.
Always wanted to buy land and have and just grow cows or crops, but we couldn't really afford to when we first moved to Tassie, because the banks don't really like young couples that don't have a lot of backing or equity. So we wanted to buy a farm back there 10-13 years ago, but we couldn't. So it's just come to the stage in the last 4-5 years that we've been able to buy a place and get some cows, and I really enjoy farming. It's probably similar to stonework, as you at the end of each day you can look back and see you've achieved something, whether you're growing cows or ploughing a paddock or something. You get a satisfaction out of achieving something at the end of each day. So it's similar in that way. I like that.
John Boland creating a beautiful stone wall on that building site at Hadspin in Tasmania's northeast. You're listening to A Country Breakfast Summer here on RN. I'm Edwina Farley. Time to go fishing now. First, we check the crab pots on the mid-north coast of New South Wales and then unload tiger prawns on the wharf in Cairns.
Gonna check the crab out, check the trap, make sure there's a bit of bait in there, and hopefully there's a crab in there.
And there's a bit of disappointment, isn't there?
Yeah, well, not everyone's a winner, unfortunately, but we'll keep going through and we'll find a few sooner or later.
It's early morning, but commercial fisherman Wayne Vassallo is already out on the water. He's checking his pots, hoping to find them full of live mud crabs. Unfortunately, this time, the pot is empty. Wayne will top up the bait and try again. Now, you've pulled out your bait, and it's a variety of fish, and you hook them on. Why do you then sometimes take some and throw it away and the others you keep?
I can see which bait's been down there just overnight and which was there yesterday. So some of the bait only been there since yesterday, I'll split the heads of the mullet. There's still a bit of juice to come out of it. A little bit of fresh stuff on top of it.
Now you'll cut them up, reload the trap, throw it back into the same spot.
As soon as though that crab trap didn't have any crabs in it, I might shift it 15 or 20 metres and hopefully find a spot where there might be a few crabs, but generally I don't move them too far. Crabs are funny things. Sometimes they can be in one area and just not bite, and then next thing you know they bite their heads off. So it's a bit of luck involved in it, as well as trying to keep some good fresh bait on the bike.
G'day, I'm Michael Kavner. I'm on Queens Lake near Laurieton on the New South Wales mid-north coast. This is Wayne's fishing spot. Customers will pay a premium for A-grade crustaceans. The only trouble is we're not catching any. Now again, we've come in, no luck.
No, we went to a little bit of an area where they might have moved or packed up, and we'll keep on looking and we'll find them here somewhere.
So we'll throw this trap back in, and hopefully I'm not bringing you much luck at the moment.
Yes, I think these crabs like this microphone here. They were going all right until we pulled the gear out, weren't they? But anyway.
Not to be deterred, we continue on our way around the lake, checking the crab pots as we go. See whether we've had any better luck on this one. And here we go. Now, you've done exceptionally well here.
We've got three in this trap. It's made up for the three we just pulled that didn't have it. So we're back to one a trap.
They're mud crabs. What sort of standard are they?
Well, we've got a couple of, looks like A-grade females, and we've got a one-armer as well. So a bit of good crab and a bit of not so good crab, but at the end of the day, they're all good crabs when you sell them.
Now, you'd say A-grade females, are they attractive to the market?
The A-grade females are definitely the crabs that buyers seem to want. Female crabs are very big in the Asian market. They definitely where the money is on your female crabs.
And being an A-grader, looking at them, they'd be about a plate size. Is that what determines their A-grade, or what other attributes?
The hardness of the shell, the fact that they've got all their limbs still attached to their body. Sometimes they've been fighting and they've lost limbs and swimmers and fingers and whatnot. But because they've got all their limbs on, that's what they want.
And the one armour, how would they usually lose one of them?
similar to like a lizard. If they feel threatened and they grab hold of something with their claw, they tend to drop the claw, and you're too busy trying to get the claw off your finger or whatnot to worry about the rest of the crab. Also, when they shed their shells, they become very soft, and it could be a fact that when they're soft and they're a bit vulnerable and they lose them to fish and whatnot.
Well, I better let you get this catch into the buckets because the large one seems to be trying to find a hole to escape.
Yeah, he wants to get out. I don't blame him. Yeah, as I say, today it's pretty good because they're nice and quiet, so we'll just put these guys in the bucket so they can't hurt each other or hurt us and process them through.
Processing a mud crab ready for market isn't easy. As we've already heard, mud crab claws can do some serious damage. Wayne, you've come back in. The boat's on the trailer, but you now have to tie the crabs up before you leave. You grab the crab, you put it up on the bench. You've got one up on the bench at the moment. Put your bare foot on the back of the crab.
Yeah, I put my foot on the back of the crab just to stop it from moving around too much while I tie it up. Your hands are busy with holding strings and lifting pedalers and that up and holding claws from biting you. So the only way to keep the crab in place is by using your foot, unfortunately.
You've got the twine going around the crab through their main claws, and then you actually use your toes almost to get a little bit of purchase on the twine itself.
Yeah, it's like when you're trying to do a bow tie, you need someone to hold the knot to make sure you keep it nice and tight, because if that string or twine ain't really tight, the crab will bust out of it, start attacking the other crabs and fighting whatnot inside the boxes. So that it's important that to get that the twine as tight as possible around the claws to prevent the fighting from taking place.
Looking at your foot, though, that's holding the crab down, I'm still counting five toes. Have you ever had a near mishap?
Well, I haven't been bitten on the toes, but I've been whacked by on my fingers plenty of times. But luckily enough, toes haven't been too bad at this stage.
It does break a lot of people. I've seen grown men cry. You know, a lot of people come on and they try their hardest, but they're just not cut out for it. And then, we have to go and drop them off or whatever. There's only the few that actually come back season after season and enjoy the work.
You definitely notice Nadine Adams on the wharf at Cairns in far north Queensland. She's one of the few women who's made it in the male-dominated prawn trawling industry. At the moment, she and the crew are busy unloading tiger prawns after more than 100 days at sea. Hello, I'm Renee Clough. Nadine is first mate on board the FV Ocean Thief, and she's not afraid of hard physical work.
Well, I've definitely got muscles that I never used to have, but not looking too butch, so that's okay. One of the most physical things is that, you know, we work long hours, especially in a banana season, for example. We may not have had too much sleep, and then we may have to go straight in and unload the product that we've got because our freezer's full, so that means we might be unloading 30 tonne of prawns. And although there's conveyors and things that help you, we are manually lifting the boxes, each box out, and putting it onto a conveyor, and you can imagine what 30 tons of prawns looks like, and kind of three or four people down there doing it, it can be really strenuous. So it's about the determination and the stamina you have, just about getting the job done, not letting the fatigue get to you, and still working as a team together. Yeah, you have to be a certain kind of mindset to do it, I think.
This former Londoner has been working the prawn boats in Northern Australia for a few years now, rising up the ranks from cook to deckie and now first mate. And she has plans to climb the ladder even further and become a skipper in the Austral Fisheries fleet.
Basically, you work underneath the skipper. You have to be in control of the deck, processing of the products, and basically making sure that everything's organised as it should be, because obviously the skipper's in the wheelhouse most of the time, so I'm the person down on the deck making sure things happen the way they should be.
How difficult was that transition from cook to first mate?
Wasn't too difficult for me, I didn't find. I think it's more about the kind of traits you have as a person, more than anything. I was kind of itching to move on from the cook's position. I'd kind of done it for a couple of years and kind of learned what I could there. And it was more the progression moving on to working with the boys and having to keep up with them, but I didn't find that too hard either.
Even if you do have those attributes, that stamina, that determination, are the opportunities there for women in the fishing industry?
I think more so now than ever. Austral Fisheries have definitely helped me along the way. They've encouraged me to do what I'm doing now. They're encouraging me to expand my education further. They like me to do the skipper ticket. It's still a lot harder for a woman, even making the transition from a cook onto the deck as a deckie. You have to really prove yourself, and you know there won't be people sticking their hands up to take a girl on unless they know who you are, what you do, how you are. You know, you've already proved yourself in some way. But there are women coming through, but not very many, unfortunately. But I think that's also, you know, it's the girls out there that aren't actually going and doing these kind of jobs in the first place. If you're not going to give it a try in the first place, then there's not going to be many girls doing it.
What advice would you have for girls who perhaps would like to do it?
Be focused on what you want to do. Don't worry about what other people say. I found that a lot of the guys here have that stereotypical view of women, even though they are young and, you know, they have their own minds and stuff. And I think it's that old school mentality that people are still trying to break through for women doing all different jobs in Queensland. But if people aren't willing to go through that and do it, then that won't change.
Adding to the challenge for Nadine Adams is the fact that the skipper of the Ocean Thief also happens to be her partner. Robbie Phillips admits he initially had some reservations about having Nadine as his second in command, but says it's worked out well.
It takes a lot of the aggression out of the boat, and saying that, Nadine's probably one of the most aggressive people on the boat, and that's why she's so good at her job, you know. It's the kind of job where you don't take no from anybody. To change the attitudes of a male-dominated industry, they definitely have to prove themselves to everybody, and it can be quite daunting for a male on the boat when you have such an assertive female to try and match that.
Do the blokes have to sort of, you know, inhibit their swearing a little bit, that type of thing?
Not at all. The Nadine has got the worst gutter mouth out of a lot of us.
The skipper of the Ocean Thief, Robbie Phillips, speaking about his first mate and partner, Nadine Adams, who clearly has no problems matching it with the blokes. Renee Clough with that story from Cairns in Far North Queensland.